I think everybody listening today probably understands that it would be great to be able to save money, and we should save money for retirement. And I think a lot of people who are listening today are doing that. But there are circumstances, and we all have them. You have them. I have them. I have a young child that my wife and I are raising, and so there's some expense there. I know people who have children at home but are also helping the parents. They're kind of sandwiched in generations. And I know that creates a lot of financial angst and financial hardships. Well, Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner and founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc., is our guest now. He's the author of The Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. With us, he's been hadn't been with us for a while, so it's great to have him back. And certainly, if you have questions about your retirement, your savings, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Frank, thank you for taking time to be with us again today. Really appreciate it.
It's always great to be with you, Larry.
It's great. I think in general, it's hard to prioritize saving for the future when there are a lot of pressing financial needs today. But it really is important to always be saving at least a little for retirement, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's no way, you can't rely on living nicely on Social Security and the old pension like my father used to anticipate. That's gone for most people. So you're on your own to save for retirement, and if you don't, it's likely not going to happen.
Yeah. We often hear from people who are saving to put the kids through college, and they aren't sure how they can do that and save for retirement. So what's your advice for those folks?
Well, you have to set priorities, and you may have to scale back. But if you don't save for your own retirement, then you're likely to be dependent upon your kids. And most of the people that I work with would really hate to be dependent upon their children. But nevertheless, I think, your parents owe you three things, love, education and values. And so the education is a big part of what we need to pass on to the next generation. And so you may need to do both. And there are ways to handle that if you start early, so that it's not a crushing financial burden, as long as you don't have some complicating factor like unemployment and, or some horrible sickness.
Yeah. And then there are the folks who have kids and aging parents.
Well, and that's half of all adults between 40 and 59 are supporting either a child or their parents. And one out of seven is supporting both. So it's a big problem for a lot of people. And as you mentioned in the introduction, it can cause quite some angst. But there are ways to deal with that. We'll be talking about them as we go along.
Yeah, Frank Armstrong, our guest. You may have some questions for him. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Kim in Milwaukee has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I wanted to ask, I'm 26, and I'm working at my first, real job out of college. I have some debt. I have some student loan debt. And I've been putting away some money in my 401k. I wanted to know kind of what you think I should be, how much do you think I should be putting away in my 401k? What percentage of my income? Should I be focusing more on trying to get the debt out of the way first? And should I change the percentage of my pay that goes in as I get older?
Okay, lots of good questions for somebody whose first real job getting out wants to save.
It's important that you start saving for retirement early, because those dollars can add up exponentially over the rest of your career and really be a meaningful benefit. On the other hand, consumer debt and college debt are ugly. And so you want to clean that up as quickly as you can. And I say it's ugly because in the case of credit card debt and maybe some college debts, depending on how they're structured, I can't imagine a rate of return higher than the cost of the debt. So in the case of credit cards, it can be 35% or so per year. And I can't imagine a rate of return that's realistic, say, above 10 or 11 in my wildest, most optimistic dreams. So you're losing ground every time you put money away in savings as opposed to reducing the debt. But you need to work on both. It is important, though, that as you clear out your debts, you increase your level of savings as your income goes up, as will for most folks over their career, and as your debts from college go down, increase the amount of savings. And eventually, you know, you'd like to get to 15 to 20% of your pre-tax income into savings, which can be helped by using 401ks and things. A lot of people choke on that big number because they want the new iPod. But the fact is that, you know, you're not going to be able to retire if you don't have a pretty substantial chunk of money to replace your income. And so you've got to make those trade-offs.
Big chunk. Kim, thank you. Appreciate your call. So 15.
Yeah, I'm actually putting in. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Kim.
I was going to say I'm actually putting in 16% of my income right now because I'm.
Well, that's really good. That's really good, and you work on getting the college debt down. You're fortunate that you're able to do that. But a lot of people would choke on that 20% number. But I always try and tell people that, you know, somewhere in the world is somebody who makes about 80% of what you do, and they manage to live a meaningful life. And if they can, then you should be able to put 20% away and not suffer, too.
Yeah. Good going, Kim. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. You had a great start.
Great start. Chris in Cedarburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Hi. My question has to do with my parents. And my dad, over the years, saved up a substantial amount of money for his retirement to the point where they're independent. They don't need my help. But my mother was suddenly put into a nursing home, and they really hadn't prepared to protect some of the assets that he had collected over the years or, you know, acquired over the years.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there was somehow at this point, somehow we could move the money into a different account of some kind to protect some of those assets.
Hmm. The states aren't entirely stupid. They figured that out, and it's going to be very difficult. You know, you might want to get a local attorney or financial planner who's familiar with elder care issues to help you out. But in general terms, I wouldn't count on just willy-nilly transferring assets and thinking that the state's going to roll over and pick up all those costs for your mother.
No, it's. I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's going to happen, but it does bring up the whole issue of long-term care. Is that something that you figure as part of your financial planning? Is, you know, what about insurance, long-term care insurance versus perhaps investing money or just setting money aside and financing that yourself or having that in mind to finance yourself?
It's a tricky issue, Larry, because you know, for the very wealthy, they can self-fund. For the very poor, they'll probably be picked up by Medicaid. But for the interim people, the people in the middle, they could wipe out their lifetime savings because long-term care is extraordinarily expensive. I personally have long-term care insurance, but I got mine maybe 10 years ago, and many of the insurers didn't properly rate the risks or what they thought they could earn on the money. And in fact, many of them counted on almost everybody dropping their policies, which would before they needed them. And none of those things came true. And so they're either raising benefits, in some cases almost doubling them, or cutting benefits retroactively, or just withdrawing from the market entirely. So you have to be pretty careful about the financial integrity of the institution, the ability of the institution to change the contractual payments, and how much you sign up for. Because for most people, 5 years of coverage would be enough. You're either going to recover and most people do recover and come back or die before 5 years. But a lifetime policy is extraordinarily expensive. So you probably ought to talk to someone who's pretty familiar with the ins and outs of the market and decide for yourself. But there's no one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter solution. In my case, I took it because I never wanted to be a burden on my somewhat younger wife.
Yeah.
And other people will have other concerns. But you can, in fact, and many people have, gone through their entire retirement savings, and that's a big risk that's out there hanging over everybody's head.
Yeah, and this may not be a fair question. It's not something I would expect you necessarily to know, but what it costs to be in a nursing home or for extended care can amount to a lot of money every year.
It can amount to a lot of money every month. I mean, it's something that's typically middle class families can't and don't budget for that. It's a wild card out there, just hanging over your head. It's the sword of Damocles, just hanging out there, and you don't get the control when if you fall and break your hip, or if you have some other health problem. Those things aren't something that are easily controlled.
Yeah, no, that's for that's.
I'm
for
a
sure.
believer in it, but I think you have to be very careful when you shop for it and rate the company that you buy from. See what their experience in the market has been. See what they can do to raise your rates or cut your benefits in the contract. Determine how long you need the coverage. There's all kinds of considerations, and it's not something that you want to just willy-nilly do without a lot of thought and a lot of study.
A lot of thought and study. Well, this 5 years actually kind of makes a little sense to me, your idea.
Because the lifetime benefit is extraordinarily expensive if you can get it at all anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas, 5 years or 3 years is probably going to be good for 90-95% of the people who ever need to draw on the policy.
Wow. Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He's the author of The Informed Investor and the co-author of Save Your Retirement. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You may be looking forward to the day when you can finish your working life and settle into retirement. That dream might include fishing or gardening or reading or knitting, or maybe you're going to volunteer and spend lots of time with the grandkids. Or maybe you just like your work so much you're never going to quit. In any event, I think most of us want to make sure that we have the funds we want when we want in our later years. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Visiting today with Frank Armstrong. Frank's a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc., author of a couple of really good books, The Informed Investor, and the co-author of Save Your Retirement. And Frank, thanks again for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure, Larry.
Always fun. You can join in. Maybe you have an investment question. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd really love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email. I had a comment from Terry in Milwaukee, who said, my father was in a memory care facility in Milwaukee area for about a year before he passed away in June. His care costs were roughly $300 a day, plus extras like wheelchair rentals and so forth. Thankfully, the care was kind and professional. Shudder to think the quality of care he would have gotten if he had not been a prudent saver throughout his life. $300 a day.
It's expensive. There's no doubt about it, and it varies, of course, across. It's more expensive in New York City than it might be in Wisconsin, but it's still going to be a big number wherever you are.
Yeah. So it's something you really you need. You are founder of Investor Solutions, Inc. And I think it's worth it for people to know how you kind of make your money. We want people to know that you're not recommending things because you get paid to steer people to them.
No, we're fee-only advisors, and incidentally, I don't have an insurance license, even though we're talking about long-term care.
Yeah.
You know, as a financial planner, I need to be familiar with those areas, but we're primarily investment advisors and fee-only advisors, so we have a flat fee based on the size of the accounts with us, and then we don't accept a single penny from any other source, so that our recommendations are not based on how much commissions we can get, and we're independent. So nobody tells us, look, you got to push the company product. And I think it's important to understand that the difference between an advisor who's working with only your interest at heart and a salesman who's representing the interests of one of the big major brokerage houses.
Yeah. So a fee only is really, that's going to be a neutral person, hopefully, with your interest in mind.
We think that we can give almost totally objective advice without the conflicts of interest that permeate the sales process.
Yeah, Bill in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good afternoon. My question is regarding either a SEP IRA or an individual 401k. I'm wondering if either one of those plans has any advantages over the other for a self-employed person.
I think you can put more away into the 401k, you still have all the flexibility that to not make contributions if it's a bad year for you. We typically see 10 or 15 times as many 401ks for clients as we would a SEP IRA. It's a little simpler to set up the SEP, but you know, these are cookie cutters. You just sign a couple forms that are provided by the provider and off you go. And you know, in either case, you have maximum flexibility to make investments. So I would tilt towards preferring the 401k.
Huh.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, volatility, before we go back to the phones here, I'm thinking about volatility in portfolios, always something to take into consideration. All the things going on, global, national, international, local economies, you know, and sometimes it seems like it might be impossible to protect yourself. What are the biggest risks right now?
Well, the biggest risk is always the investor's own behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want to repeat, buy high, sell low, repeat it until they're broke and wonder why they're not making money in the financial markets. They have to accept that the markets are volatile and then grade the amount of risk that they're willing to take and then stick with that plan. Because if you're always behind the power curve, buying when you should be selling, et cetera, you're not going to make money. And we've had, what many people thought was a near-death experience in 2008, and yet the markets have fully recovered. They're gone on to all-time highs today, and it didn't take long for that recovery to come around. And people who stayed the course are far ahead of where they were at the market highs in 2008. But you have to accept the market on its own terms. It's the greatest wealth creation mechanism we've ever seen, but the cost is it goes up and down as it increases in value. You can diversify away some of that risk, but at the end of the day, you still have market risk, and that's the risk that just can't be diversified away, no matter how far afield you go. If you want a fully guaranteed account, the one guarantee that you know you're going to get is it's not going to grow in value and probably shrink after taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. So stay the course. Pick your...
Right. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't take steps to prudently reduce the volatility. Volatility is not a great thing. It's the cost of you're paid to accept risk, and that means volatility. But on its own, you want to reduce the volatility in your portfolio as much as you prudently can.
Yeah. Thinking about my daughter's 529 education account right now, which is sort of, it's a little riskier at the start, and as you get closer to the time that you're going to spend it, it gets a little more conservative.
They grade it back, but you know, I'm really a big advocate of the prepaid tuition programs.
Oh.
Because you know, today, let's say you had a 1 year old child, you could pay today's rate for tuition and fees at a university in your state, if Wisconsin offers this, and then for 1 year, and then never make another payment. And no matter what the cost of tuition was when your child was ready to go, that'd be paid.
Yeah.
So you don't have any investment risk unless the state defaults on the obligation.
Yeah, which you would hope wouldn't be likely.
But, you know, I have friends that that set that up for their child when it was an infant, who paid maybe $2,500 one time, $10,000, and now they're all the tuition and fees today are being paid for. And that's, you know, that's an enormous savings.
Absolutely.
If you'd have plunked down $10,000 20 years ago, your child's education would be paid for today, and you wouldn't have had any risk along the way, except maybe that the state might default.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened yet.
No. Happened in a city like Detroit, but not in a state. Charles and Apple.
Well, they're not. They didn't default on their prepaid tuition program.
No,
that's different.
Yeah.
There have been municipalities go broke, but the states have yet to default on any of the prepaid programs.
Charles in Appleton, your turn. Thank you, Charles, for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Frank. My quick question to Frank is: is it a good idea to put money into Universal Life to fund for retirement?
So
I'm sorry, into what?
Universal Life, did you say, Charles? I believe he said Universal Life.
If the question was Universal Life, I'm not a great believer in Universal Life as a way to fund retirement. My philosophy on life insurance is that you should buy a level term policy and invest the difference in higher return instruments than a universal life policy would give you. The only exception is if you're so rich or you have some need for an insurance payoff when you die, no matter when that is, even if you're 110, then an ordinary life policy or a universal life policy might make sense. But for the vast majority of people, my philosophy is buy term and then invest the difference in something that's going to give you a higher return with lower cost.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Charles. And Tom in Manitowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm 48, and I kind of blew my retirement 401k to pay off my house. I'm just wondering, I got to work another 20 years. I'm debt-free right now, which is a positive thing. But the thing is, 20 years probably won't be enough to give me money to retire. You think that's possible yet or not?
Well, you know, 20 years is going to be a very short time frame to put together all the capital you need to support yourself in the manner to which you'd like to become accustomed. But we have a lot of people in your situation who get to age 60, 65 and phase back. They take a job they like more, or they cut down on their hours. They don't dig into their retirement account, they may be able to stop investing and let that account continue to grow for another 5 or 10 years as they phase out of the workforce.
Right.
And we call it, you know, that's a possibility for many people.
But the thing is, if I do start making 30 to 50 grand a year, the being debt free will really help me out, right? I'll be able to do the max 401k, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, being debt free is always a good thing. And if you can control your spending in the meantime and put some money away, you can develop quite a good chunk in 20 years. I would invest it reasonably aggressively because you're making it up. You know, you can put 20-25% away if you can control the rest of your spending and taxes and have a big chunk of money. But it may not be enough. There's tons of good retirement calculators out there on the web. My site, investorsolutions.com, has got a whole bunch you can get into and do preliminary calculations. But, you know, depending on how much of your income you want to replace, you may not be able to get there in 20 years.
Yeah.
And so you may have to modify those plans.
But if you can put 25%, I mean, that's going to go a long way.
It's going to go a long way. I mean, it's better, as my mother used to say, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. You'll have a chunk of money, and you'll have some options when you do turn 65 or whatever your target retirement date is. But it won't be, it won't be as much as if you had already accumulated a ton of money at age 42. I think that's what you said your age was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
40, 48, my age is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're in a catch-up position, but pretty soon you'll be able to make extra contributions to your 401k. I think over 50, you can put an additional $5,000 or $6,000 in, and you get the tax deferral. Your position isn't hopeless. It's a little bit compromised, and you already do realize that, so you need to modify your position and save aggressively and invest aggressively and get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
Okay, what is your website again? I'm sorry I missed it.
It's investorsolutions.com, all one word. And okay, we have 100 calculators on there. Many of them are just designed to help you make preliminary.
Hey, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And if you didn't get that, just go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, and we've got a link right there to Investor Solutions, so you can go right there. An email from Leslie who says, we're interested in using a fee-only investment person once my husband retires next year. My question is, once the rep gives us the advice, who actually handles the buying and selling of whatever advice he or she gives us?
Well, you know, it depends on who the rep works for and what they do. In our case, we would establish an account for you someplace like Schwab or TD Ameritrade, and then actually manage the funds, do the buying and selling, and send you your checks every month. Other institutions where you don't, we have a fiduciary obligation to invest for you as prudently as possible. And manage the site, and we have a program set up to send checks every month. But others, where they don't have discretion on the account, you have to approve every single transaction, and you are at the end responsible for the performance of the account, rather than delegating that to someone like us. So there is a big difference between a registered investment advisor who you delegate to perform those activities for you, and a registered rep or a stockbroker who just occasionally buys and sells stuff and pretty much leaves the obligation for performance on your shoulders.
Yeah, and in my case, I would rather have you, somebody like you, helping me out than me making the final decision always.
Well, you know, most of our clients are very well educated, very bright people, but they got a life. And
yeah.
They've got other things that are more important to them than the daily management of the account. And we all can only specialize in so many things. I, for instance, am not going to change the oil in my car. It would take me months to figure out how to do that because there's professionals who do that. And I do money management, but I don't try and self-diagnose my health problems or anything else.
Jim wondered if you could explain the differences in sell terms, such like stop limit, market, and limit.
We don't set a stop order or a sell order. We would be rebalancing as various parts of the markets went up and down. And our sell strategy would be to sell stuff that's appreciated, to buy things that have gone down, because in the entire history of this firm, I don't think we've ever done one of those trades that we weren't happy with a few years later. Might not be happy with it tomorrow And we have to explain it to our clients, and some of them don't like it, frankly, because it's counterintuitive. Why are you selling the best thing in the portfolio? But it's not going to go up forever, and the things that have gone down relative to that are not going to go down forever. And so you can profitably and incrementally improve your position by rebalancing. But we don't have stop orders. The way to limit your loss in the portfolio is to balance the amount of risky assets, stock markets type stuff, with safe assets, which are CDs and treasury bills, et cetera, and then get to a position where you can sleep at night and stay there. But don't try to sell. We don't believe it's appropriate to put in a stop order because first of all, we don't do individual stocks. We just do markets.
Yeah. Mark in Onalaska, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I got a question. I've got an IRA account that has kind of been the result of a couple job changes where I had to roll 401ks over. And as it kind of continuously builds up, and I'm wondering, because my wife also is a teacher and she has a separate retirement account, is there any way to bundle or to roll my IRA into either like her account to try to get more value out of the base amount that, you know, percentage interest rates are growing? Or is there, if I get another job that has a 401k, is it possible to transfer my IRA into that 401k?
But, you know, the idea of consolidating the accounts is important because you get better management and more economies of scale. And you may be able to do better for yourself by taking that account and going to Vanguard or Schwab or someplace and getting no load mutual funds because the cost will be lower than a 401k probably. The idea of managing it as a single unit as opposed to half a dozen different IRAs makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so instead of having, say, my existing, or if I start a new job with a 401k, would it be better if I just say, and obviously it depends on whether there's any kind of matching or anything involved, but would it be more sense just to use my own, make my own contributions into my existing IRA than starting a separate 401k account?
Well, unless it's really terrible, a 401k, you want to get the match. But in many 401ks, you can invest more aggressively, appropriately, and with lower cost by doing your own 401k. At some point, you can go to Fidelity and get their no load index funds, or Vanguard and get theirs, or Schwab, or use exchange traded funds, and you can very effectively and economically diversify that portfolio and tailor it exactly to what you want. On the other hand, most 401ks have embedded costs for administration and investment advice that you may not need, may not benefit you.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for calling. And Deborah and Madison, do you have a quick question?
Yeah. I am curious to know, once you start collecting Social Security, if a couple years down the road you decide you're bored with retirement, you want to work for a couple of years, can you opt in and out of it, or once you're in, or once you're out, you're back out?
I think there's a lot of flexibility, but you know, I'm not a Social Security expert. I've seen, in my studies, I've read lots of cases where people opt in, opt out, change their, prepay or repay benefits, et cetera. They've tightened up a little bit of that in the last couple of years. But you really need to either go to the Social Security Administration and get them to help you through it, or get a good financial planner to help you through it. And I wouldn't want to, I'm familiar with some of the issues, but I'm not an expert on gaming the 401k. The Social Security system.
Frank, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I look forward to our next visit. Appreciate it.
I always look forward to it, too. Thank you, guys.
Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner and author of The Informed Investor and Save for Your Retirement. He is president of Investor Solutions, Inc., and we have a link to him on my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. Garden Talk tomorrow, Aaron LaFave joins us from Eau Claire County. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.